we ready to have an AA meeting? My name is Alex, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday 8 p.m. Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at the NAVA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Books of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual, in our personal stories, describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on aabluechipspeakers.org will hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. Tonight's speaker is Josh, coming to us from the I Can, We Can't group here at NABA. And I have a feeling the presentation is going to be as put together as he looks tonight. Here's Josh.
I love AA. My name is Josh. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Josh.
Grateful to be here. Grateful to be alive and sober. I always do something whenever I speak. There's a lot of commotion. We come in with all this stuff running through our minds. The world is on us. So everybody would just kind of get quiet for a second with me. And if you'll close your eyes, we're going to go through a little breathing exercise and just kind of get grounded on a one accord. So just follow my lead. And then I'll do what the program taught me to do, and I'll invite God into this room and to fill me, and hopefully one person in here hears something that maybe their mind gets cracked a little bit, saying, I might be an alcoholic and I might need this thing too. So if you would, please just kind of just close your eyes and just get grounded for a second. I'll lead us through three breaths. Big deep breath in, breathe in God, breathe out self, breathe in God, breathe out self, breathe in God, breathe out us. God, I just pray tonight that someone hears something that opens them up. This is your playground. This is your book. This is your work. This is your house. I just pray that you use me and that you fill this room with your presence. And you just do what you do. This is a divinely inspired program. You've changed me. You've changed so many lives. And I just pray that one dart hits one heart tonight. So we love you. We thank you. Amen. Cool. Still Josh, still an alcoholic. Thanks for doing that with me, guys. My sobriety day is 3/17/17, so St. Patrick's Day of 2017, got the luck of the Irish. No, I just really got arrested, that's all. But there's something that I want to say. Has anybody been here in the first 30 days? Raise your hand. Let's freaking go. 90 days? Yes. 6 months? Welcome. Glad you're here, all of you, right? We were all there at one point. Now, raise your hand in here if you've got a DUI. Raise your hand if you've ever gone to jail, okay? Raise your hand in the world out there, right? I mean, I consider myself an alcoholic, but raise your hand if you've ever overdosed. Raise your hand if you've ever got divorced and burned your life to the ground. Okay. Well, the reason why I ask those questions is because a lot of people think that you have to answer yes to those to be an alcoholic. And that's not the case. Right? The fact that I'm an alcoholic means I'm bodily and mentally different from my fellows. I've suffered from a three-part disease that requires a three-part solution. And that's why we have the triangle, unity, service, and recovery. Three-part disease that requires a three-part solution. I have an alcoholic mind. Right? I'm maladjusted to life, as Dr. Silkworth tells me. That's going to lie to me, right? It's going to come up with some trivial excuse that runs parallel with this sound reason, this pile of evidence over here that shows if I pick up one, I'm off to the races and it leads nowhere good. But yet, because I have no effective mental defense against the first drink, yet, hence the word powerless, right? I have no power. I buy into that lie over and over and over and over again. And then I have this allergy, right, of the body, this phenomenon of craving, that once I put it in my body, I can't stop. I can't. Anybody ever heard once too many, a thousand never enough? Yeah, that's me, right? Like, I cannot so much as put anything in my body that changes the way I feel, or else it sets off the allergy. Period, point blank, end of story. Period. But then here's the kicker, is you have this spiritual thing, right? You have this spiritual malady, as the book calls it, and the definition of a malady is literally dis-ease, disease, disease. And Dr. Silkworth so beautifully tells me that I'm restless, I'm irritable, and I'm discontented unless I can again experience the sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. That, oh, right? And yet, here I am powerless again. They have so much power over me that he even says it's the sense of ease and comfort. Just to know that I'm clocking out or I'm in the car or to go meet the guy, right? That thing inside of me starts to unwind a little bit, right? That's how much power it has over me. I don't even have to have it yet, and the bubble guts stop, right? Period. But then you put me in a place like jail, or you put me in a place like rehab or detox, right? And those places are good. I mean, I needed every drink I ever took plus one more to get me to where I got, right? But then you take away the only solution that I've ever known, and I'm crazier than ever. It feels like growing depression and anxiety inside. Why? Because alcohol or mood or mind-altering substance were the only thing that ever eased that thing inside of me that felt like it was grinding long before I ever took a drink. Right? Like, I do want to say this, too, because it breaks my heart. I was low bottom, y'all. Like, that was just my story. Everybody's experience is different, but I do want to cover one little section of the preamble, okay? Where is it? Here. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people, they changed it, who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other. This is the part that I really hope hits home. It says, they may solve their common problem. Okay, because I had the circumstances I had in my life where alcohol drove me to doesn't mean that you do either. Our common problem is my mind lies to me. I have an allergy of the body. We all think the same. We feel the same. We drink the same. It might manifest different, but let's focus on the common problem here, all the isms, right? Just because my story was a certain way or my life looked a certain way doesn't mean that this thing's not for you too, okay? Growing up, I grew up in Georgia. My dad, I believe, was an alcoholic. I'm not supposed to diagnose anybody. I know he's an alcoholic. But anyways, I grew up in a dysfunctional home. That doesn't make me an alcoholic. From the outside, like outside the house, like Josh was a all-star pitcher. He made straight A's, had all the friends, right? Like, had all the stuff, like, from y'all's perspective, it looked like Josh had it going on. But on the inside, that spiritual malady thing was already on me, and I felt separate and apart from, right? Separate and apart from. And then when my dad bought me alcohol at the age of 11 on New Year's Eve, and I took that first drink, it did something for me that nothing else had done before. And I call it little Josh. It allowed little Josh to come out and play. I could say the things that I wanted to say. I could move the way that I wanted to move. What, you name it, right? I could act extemporaneously when before I was full of fear. And I always say this, I mean, Bob D says it, a lot of circus speakers say it, but like, man, if alcohol and drugs didn't do for you what they did for me, then probably won't let them do to you what they did to me, right? They just, it did something for me that nothing had ever done, and that was the only thing that ever eased the thing inside of me. Until I finally got beaten to a state of reasonableness, and then I got a sponsor, and I came in here, and I started working some steps, and all of a sudden, this hole inside of me, this spiritual malady, started to unwind a little bit through this process, right? And, I mean, it's hard to get alcohol at 11. I mean, maybe not for some people, but for me it was. So I started using other things. And, I mean, we're in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm here for the traditions that keep everything alive, singleness, purpose, all that stuff. But heroin, cocaine, crack, meth, all of it was a part of my story. The first thing I ever did was drink at the age of 11, and then when the drugs and all the other stuff, as I was drinking through that, the consequences got too heavy, or the physical aspects, I put that to the side, and then before I knew it, I was lifting up the couch cushions at my mom's house, scrounging up quarters to go to the corner store to buy a 211 Steel Reserve at 6:30 in the morning. But yet my alcoholic mind for years told me, Josh, you're not an alcoholic, you're just a drug addict. But my mind is out to kill me. The book tells me my disease centers in my mind rather than my body. So I have to keep my mind in check. Have to. Sponsorship, meetings, being willing to be honest and vulnerable, which the fifth step taught me, right? Like, I didn't have that tool in my tool belt before I got here. And, I mean, I was pretty full-blown, like, right away. I was looking for something to change the way I feel almost instantly, and that's what I saw. Like, that's just what I saw, you know? And my dad and my mom got divorced when I was 11. I moved up to Sugar Hill from, like, Norcross area. And, you know, my dad got really, really sick. He ended up having a heart transplant on Christmas Day. He got evicted from his apartment, couldn't work, no nothing. So my mom let him move back into our house where we were staying in Sugar Hill. After all the abuse as a kid, all that stuff. And I need to cover one more thing and I'll do it in a second. So my mom moved my dad back in. And I woke up at 17 years old. It was the summer after my junior year had ended. And my sister was kneeling at my bedside. And she was shaking my bed violently. I was kind of upset because I really wanted to sleep in that first morning of summer. And I looked up and she had this horrified look on her face. And she said, "Dad's dead on the bathroom floor." I remember looking at the clock. I knew exactly what time it was. It was like time stood still for a second. So I got up out of bed. I ran to the bathroom. There was my father, cold, deceased, in purple on the bathroom floor. And I don't know if it was like a minute. I don't know if it was 2 minutes. I don't know if it was 5 minutes. But I stood there for X amount of time. And then my immediate thought after that was, I wonder if he has money in his wallet. And I literally stepped over my dead dad's body to go to his nightstand to pull the wallet out of his nightstand to take all the cash out to go get drunk and high. And this is at 17, like I was in my cups. And I do need to retract a little bit because I feel like my story starts before then. I was probably 7 or 8 years old, and some of you guys may wonder why I'm telling this, and I'll bring it full circle. But I was sexually molested as a kid by an older brother down the cul-de-sac, someone I looked up to growing up, and I feel like that's when my thought life started. And I think a lot of alcoholics go through traumas, but I'll kind of pull that in because that's like when I look back in hindsight, because hindsight's always 20/20. That's like when something happened inside of me that I was eventually going to have to dispose of later, and I couldn't for a really, really long time. And I'm a firm believer. I stand up from the podium, and I've spoken a lot of times, and like I say this stuff because I think the world has a stigma that those types of things only happen to women, right? Those things happen to women. And I can't tell you how many times I've stood up at a podium like this and disclosed that because I'm free of it today. Thank God for the steps, right, and the work that's done there. Like, I'm free of it. I can't tell you how many times people have come up and shaken my hand at the end of the meeting or when I'm done speaking and go, "Me too, man, me too." And I feel like those are the most powerful words in Alcoholics Anonymous ever. Me too. When I first got here and people were describing how I thought, how I drank, how I felt, I was thinking, me too, right? Me too. And those are some of the greatest words in Alcoholics Anonymous. So, and I'll tie that into solution later. I got to be careful of my time as well. So, 17, walked in on my dad, dead on the bathroom floor, went and took all the money out of his wallet. I don't know, this is a progressive disease. Like, it got worse. It just got worse, you know? I started ending up in rehabs and detoxes. My first trip to a mental institution was Charter Peachford at the age of 18. And I remember my mom kicked me out of the house. I had nothing to drink. And I remember I was like restless, irritable, and discontented like I got when I didn't have something to drink. And I got really mad. And I turned and the first thing that wasn't white on the house, I just slapped. And it was a window I can't show you, but I was a quarter inch away from cutting my carotid artery. So my girlfriend at the time called 911. Ambulance came, 1013 me, and they took me to Charter Peachford. And I didn't know it at the time, but I was suffering from the disease of alcoholism. It was homelessness or something else, some other excuse that I layered on top of that, which put me in there, right? But it was untreated alcoholism. And I'm so oblivious, right, that I go in there, I sit in there for like 10 to 14 days, and I remember I got released on the 4th of July on Independence Day. And the only reason I remember that is because I had 311 tickets for Lakewood Amphitheater to go see a concert that day, and I was super excited I got let out. So less than 6 hours after I get out of a mental institution, in there for a week and a half or 2 weeks, I'm in the parking lot of Lakewood Amphitheater with some friends, and one of my buddies has a funnel, and another one of my buddies has a bottle of Crown Royal. So I decided that it would be a good idea to mix the two and funnel Crown Royal. I could be off base here. Maybe like a hardcore frat party, but I'm pretty sure normal people don't try and funnel Crown Royal. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, I just don't think that like registers in their brain. And then I blacked out and I woke up to the lawn with the concert being over. Everything was pitch black with my girlfriend at the time driving around the amphitheater because she didn't know if I was dead or arrested. And it just got worse. I started ending up in, anybody in here ever been to the Salvation Army ARC in Atlanta? The Men's Rehabilitation Center? None? Okay. It's off Marietta Street. Okay, it's right by Georgia Tech. I had burned all my bridges. Like at that time when I would walk up to my mom's house, because of everything that I had put her through, she would literally bring me a blanket and a pillow and make me sleep on the porch. I had burned it down. So I wound up at the Salvation Army off Marietta Street. And I don't know if you guys know this, but, man, anybody ever heard of the Bluff? Room lit up. Wow, yeah. Well, fortunately or unfortunately, two turns away from that rehab I was in the Bluff. And for a guy like me that's allergic to alcohol and other drug goods, that is a bad place for a guy like me to end up. And I started making new connections. I eventually ended up getting kicked out of that rehab. I had nowhere to go. But my family, right, because I'm this actor, everybody thinks I'm doing so well. I can put on this facade, right? I got this double wife. I wear these masks. But my uncle is loading up an unlimited MARTA card for the month because he thinks I'm doing so good in rehab. But, yeah, I'm in there. And I'm drinking and I'm using the entire time while all these guys are getting sober. And then I get kicked out for a cell phone. And now I can't go back home, right? So I wound up sleeping in a tent behind the door of El MARTA station that I stole from Walmart for about 3 months. And I would get up and I would go to QT with my toothbrush and my toothpaste. And I would go into the bathroom and I'd brush my teeth. And I'd walk out and I'd steal a honey bun on the way out. And I'd go hop on MARTA and go do what I had to do throughout the city. And it just got worse. Like, I mean, I drunk logs, all that stuff is really bad, but the solution's been even better. And I'll give you two more little stories. And I got until 8:50, so we're doing okay, guys. We're doing okay. Calm down. I was at my mom's house. She had let me back in one more time. And anybody in here ever gone through DTs? Or withdrawals, shakes. So I woke up one morning and I was withdrawing, DTing, shaking. And somebody can yell it out. What normally takes away the shakes? A drink, right? A drink, yeah. So I drank, and I got some other dry goods, right, non-conference approved dry goods. And I sat there, and I didn't go to work because I felt so bad, but I drank, and I drank, and I did the other stuff, and I did the other stuff. And as the day went on, I started to feel worse and worse and worse and worse. And by God's grace and God's grace alone, he was after me. My mom caught the flu literally overnight. Literally. Like horrible flu bug overnight. So she did not go into work the following morning. And I walked up to her door at 6:15 a.m. and I knocked on her door. And I said, "Mom, I feel like I'm dying." And she immediately picked up the phone. She called 911. By the time the ambulance got to my mother's house, my blood pressure was 80 over 38. I was fading in and out of consciousness, and I was coughing up blood. I was checking out. So they rushed me to the hospital. I had a part of a needle broken off of my arm that I was too ashamed to tell anybody about. I probably sat there 3 to 6 months. Had to get it surgically removed. I was septic in my left lung. They leaned me over a table. They stuck a needle this long through the back of my left rib. They drained a liter and a half of pus of blood off my lung and showed it to me. I had endocarditis, which comes from some of that intravenous alcoholic use, right? Where bacteria got in my bloodstream, and anything that gets into your bloodstream always flows through the heart. And that bacteria latched on my heart. Now I have a defective heart valve. And then they said, "Oh yeah, Josh, you got hepatitis C." So my mom was Catholic. I laid in that hospital bed 21 days. I think priests came in and read me my last rites twice, maybe three times, and they nursed me back to health as best as they could. And after 21 days, they let me go home. And they were like, "Dude, you're not out of the clear yet. Like, your heart is screwed up." They were like, "You have to come back to the hospital every day, Monday through Sunday, to continue getting IV-infused antibiotics to fight the infection on your heart because you're not out of the clear." So my mom, the angel that she is, moves her work schedule around because I sure as hell don't have a license or a car, right? Takes me to the hospital at 7 a.m., and it wasn't even 48 hours. 48 hours after I got released from that hospital. And this is the first step all day. Powerless over alcohol. People are like, "What's your drink of choice?" Not for this guy. It's drink of no choice. Why? Because I have no choice. I drink no matter what. Period. Right? There is no choice involved. I have no defense until this. Right? Until this. And it wasn't even 48 hours after I got released from that hospital. I showed up at 7 a.m. completely loaded, getting my antibiotics at 7 a.m. doing the same thing that damn near just killed me for 21 days. And that is powerlessness in my life. I have no power, right? My mind starts to crank up. Those excuses, the blaming, that person, this situation, 30 day, that girlfriend, that party, that cop, blah, da, 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 right? To get me to buy it, to pick up that first one, and then I'm off to the races. One more time. Right? And then, I mean, at this point, I had done a lot of damage to my body, and it got worse. There was a moment where I actually broke into my mom's safe. I stole a bunch of money and Holocaust jewelry or whatever it was, and she ended up calling the cops. I was in a blackout. I went into the woods to go drink. I got there. I couldn't find something. So I decided it would be a good idea to go back to the house, which I thought I had just come out of like 10 or 15 minutes ago. It's probably more like 2.5 hours. And I got back to the door that was locked that I thought I had just walked back out of. And it was locked. So I had steel-toe boots. And I remember I kicked it in. And the door swung open, and my mom was standing in the living room with two Hall County police officers. And they went, "There you are, Josh. Put your hands behind your back." And I ended up getting a felony charge, and I went to jail. And every time I would go to jail, I don't know about you guys for those who have been, but every time I would go to jail, there's these people in there that seemed comfortable in there. Like it was like getting their weight up. They had a bed to sleep in. They got some food. They had a place to rest. Like, that was never me in there, right? partly because I probably didn't have the only solution that ever calmed me down inside or made me feel comfortable in my own skin, right? So once again, that restless, irritable, and discontentment would start to fire up when you take away my only solution. And, man, just like those times when my family would send me down and be like, Josh, if you do this one more time, like, you're kicked out of here, it's over, like, you're gone for good. And the disease is so cunning, baffling, and powerful. In those moments, you hook me up to a lie detector test. When I tell them I'm through, I mean it with every iota of my being, and I'm passing that lie detector test, but yet, once again, I have no power. So I end up picking back up one more time. And same thing with this. I remember getting released from jail. It was my release date. I was kind of like, man, you guys belong here. I don't. I played semi-professional baseball. Like, I went to college. Like, this is for you guys. Kind of throwing my middle finger up. And then I got out of jail, and my alcoholic brain started to fire back up. The thoughts, right? You put me in a jail or a rehab for long enough where someone's thinking for me and my free will is stripped away, it's a little bit easier. But then you give me back into the freedom, you take me out of that bubble, and Josh's alcoholic thinker starts to fire back up. And that's a dangerous place to be. And the thoughts started coming. Oh, you got out. You have 30 days before you have to go see your probation officer. You can just drink a couple beers and be fine. You're not really an alcoholic anyway, right? So what happened was, is I bought the lie one more time. And I took that drink, and because I'm an alcoholic, Josh takes a drink, the drink takes me, and then I have no idea where I'm going to end up. For me, this alcoholic, it's generally some sort of vehicle with flashing lights showing up to take me somewhere. That's just my experience, right? So I bought that lie one more time. And what happened was, is less than 21 days later, I'd violated my probation. And I got sent back to jail. And once again, God's grace was all over me because He put me back in the same jail cell with the same people eating the same food off the same trays after I'd sworn with every iota of my being less than 3 weeks ago that I was never going back there again. And what that was the solidification of the back half of the first step. That my life had become unmanageable. And when I sat down in that jail cell or that pod that morning, after literally swearing I'm never coming back, I sat down and I had a moment of clarity. And by, thank God, my sister, we partied. The first person I ever drank with, I mean, we partied. And she had reached the bottom before that, so she had gotten sober in AA. She had been sober. She had gotten married, had the kids, had the car, had the job, right? All the stuff that we look at. So I knew it was like a real life Ebby. I knew that AA worked because I had seen it work in someone that was so close to me that was cut from the same cloth as me. So when that moment of clarity came, it was like, you've got to do something different. And I knew AA was the answer for me. I had tried baptisms and all this other stuff through religious organizations, and like no baptism ever got me sober. Like it just didn't, right? So I went, I got released from jail, and I went straight to the Serenity House in Buford, and I went to a meeting immediately after I got out of jail. When I walked into that meeting, I had a probation officer. When I walked out of that meeting, I had a probation officer, and I had a sponsor. I didn't have a cell phone, y'all. My sponsor was appalled because I would call him from a different number every single day, and he's like, most people don't even call. But now I have to answer every number that calls me because you are actually calling me. And I started going through this book once a week, the black parts. That's the solution. That's the words. Yeah. But I also have to apply those to my life. And I started taking commitments. And I started going through the steps. And steps 1, 2, and 3, right? Like, I mean, those are experiential steps. You got the third step prayer. You got all those things. And here's the thing. Is I had been in AA before. When the back problems were on me, right, courts, girlfriend, mom, whoever it was, I'd come in, and I would always do the AA waltz, where I would do steps 1, 2, and 3, and then I was out the door. 1, 2, 3, out the door, right? No real work has been done. The the first tangible piece of evidence that somebody wants to get and stay sober is right in that inventory. And in that inventory, the first time that I did it, I saw these things, like the resentments changed, the fear, whatever it was, like the rows were like the same, but and then it was like the same old parts of Josh showed up in all of those situations, and it was like, oh, I get it now, right? And I write all this stuff, and I end up doing my fifth step, and then, you know, in the book it talks about we looked in every dark nook and cranny of the past. And that thing that happened to me as a kid, that I swore that I was never going to tell anybody, right? Like, being sexually molested by an older brother down the road when I was like 6 or 7 years old, those were the things that not even my mom was going to know. That stuff was going to the grave with me, right? And as I finish this fourth step, and then I go home and I take an hour, and then over the next couple of days, that thing inside of me that I should have gotten rid of, that I didn't get rid of, starts to bubble up inside of me, and I know I'm standing at a turning point. And I remember being at work, and it paralyzed me, where I couldn't even move. And it was like, I either hold on to this, and I go back to drinking, or I become a dry drunk, or I can do what the program asked me to do, and I can dispose of these things. So I called my sponsor, and he didn't answer. But then eventually he answered, and I got rid of that, and I told him about the time I was sexually molested again as an adult in the rehab. I told him all the things that I never wanted to tell anybody else, because my secrets keep me sick. My secrets keep me separated from you and from God. And that's why in that step, it says ourselves, or admit to God, to ourselves, and another human being. All three of those are equally important, right? And as I move through that process, I mean, this is the greatest show on earth. A is the greatest show on earth. How am I doing on time? Okay. I got two amends stories for you, and then I'm gonna get a little bit more current. I'll give you one amends story. So as you do as I did my fourth and fifth step, I saw this concrete evidence. Now I could go back into the world and make my amends, admit my wrongs to my fellows, right? Where it wasn't just like, I'm sorry, but I don't really know what I'm saying sorry for. So let me just go ahead and act in that behavior again, right? Like there was clarity now from the work. And I start going through these amends, and I mean, things are just happening, and like the promises that Mary read is like, man, those are ninth step promises. Like, yeah, we get pieces of those along the way, but man, you want to experience those the way they're meant or they're written? Do your amends, right? Like, there was this couple that I was looking for all over. I owed them money. I was looking on old phones. I was looking on social media. I was looking all over the place. Couldn't find them anywhere. Could not find them anywhere. And I remember I was working for DirecTV at the time up in, like, Flower Branch in Gainesville. And I remember it was pouring down rain. I was in my rain suit. You can't really get dish signal in the rain, so it's hard to do work. And I remember I got off early, I looked in the mirror, I was like, man, I need a haircut. Instead of just going home and sitting on the couch, I'm going to go get my haircut. So I called, got an appointment, whatever. So instead of turning one way out of the gas station, I turned the other. And as I'm driving down the road, a car going in the other direction, there's three lanes. There's a big Expedition broken down in the middle of the lane with its flashers on. And that thing that the steps opened up inside of me, God consciousness or spirit or whatever you want to call it, tells me to go help because I've been in that situation and I know what it's like just to need to get your car pushed out of the middle of the road. And it could be like Betty White, you know what I mean? Like somebody's grandma. And I flipped around, I pulled up behind this car, I put my flashers on, I'm already in my rain gear, I was pouring down rain, I run up to the window, I knock on the driver's side window, and the window rolls down, and it's Stephanie and Tim. The two people that I couldn't find anywhere on my amends list. God presented me an opportunity to be obedient or to listen. And then I pull up randomly to the two people that I've been searching for 6 months. I can't make this up. God presented me an opportunity to help them push their car to a gas pump. I filled up their gas tank. I made my verbal amends and paid them their money back. And I haven't seen them since. But if I didn't listen, right? If I didn't listen, I would have blown that opportunity and never had that experience. And it's like living this thing or hearing these stories, like it's almost like you got to be Helen Keller or something to like not believe by the time you get to the ninth step and you do your amends that there is a power greater than yourself working on your behalf through this process. Like, period. And I've got tons of them. I don't have enough time. Can we, like, extend this 30? No, I'm just kidding. I don't have enough time. But, yeah, that was one of the amazing men's stories where I just walked away going, how the hell does this happen? You know what I mean? How the hell does this happen? And my life got better. It hasn't all been sunshine and rainbows. I might go, like, 2 or 3 minutes over. But a couple things I do want to touch on. You know, everything I have in my life today is a direct result of Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, I had nothing before I got here. Y'all heard it. I didn't have a cell phone. All I had was a probation officer. And, like, because the program taught me that you guys taught me to suit up and show up one day at a time and, like, not necessarily buy into my feelings, but talk about them and work the steps and, like, gain this traction and, like, do the things and, like, just keep going regardless of how you feel, like, trudge the road, right? Because you guys taught me that, I was able to become employable and I got to get a job and I got to keep that job. And because I got to keep that job, because you guys taught me how to suit up and show up one day at a time, because I kept that job, I was able to get insurance with that job. And because I kept suiting up and showing up and staying sober and working the steps, and I was able to keep that insurance and go through a year-long testing process where, because I was employable and you guys taught me how to get that job, keep that job, and keep the insurance, I was able to get my hepatitis C cured, right? Pretty cool. Pretty legit. You can clap. I'm just kidding. And because you guys did all those things and you taught me how to get that job and keep that job and get that insurance, when I was 3 years sober, I go to see this cardiologist, and I was seeing one cardiologist for a long time, and the whole staff flipped. I walk in to see this new cardiologist, and he's looking at my charts, and he goes, Josh, this happens to people that are alcoholics, right? And you're young, you're 30 years old. Was that the case with you? And I was like, yeah. Started telling him about the doctor's opinion. He kind of correlated it to his overeating habits, and he goes, Josh, we're heading towards a brick wall. He goes, it might be a year, it might be 5 years, it might be 10 years, I don't know. But my heart and my spirit are telling me that you are no longer going to abuse your body. I want to put you in front of a heart surgeon. So at 3 years sober, in March of 2020, 2 weeks before the world shut down, they sawed my chest open, and Alcoholics Anonymous gave me a new heart valve where my heart is now functioning normally. You clap for that one. That's legit. And in Bill's story, and I'm losing it. I'm doing horrible with time. In Bill's story, it says, for if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, so work, it's laborious, it means that I have to self-sacrifice my plans and my designs, then I would not be able to survive the certain, not possible, maybe, trials and low spots ahead. Well, when they're pumping me full of things that I'm allergic to, I don't know what else to do but do what the book tells me to do. And the day after I woke up from open heart surgery, I had a man that was six days sober sitting across from me in the hospital room reading the doctor's opinion, because I don't know what else to do, y'all. I got to stay connected to this thing. I've got to stay connected. I came home, all the meetings were shut down, and I started a Zoom meeting every single night. We went through the entire book twice for 3 years because I've got to stay connected to this thing. And it hasn't all been sunshine and rainbows. There's been a lot of cool stuff. I'm going to get this in. I died trying. My mom had a cancer scare when I was 5 years sober. I went through a 5-year breakup with somebody that I met in the program. We ended that relationship amicably. I got a call. I remember my mom wouldn't even let me in her house 8 years ago, I guess. At 5 years sober, she calls me. She has a watermelon-sized cyst in her abdomen so big they couldn't even tell what ovary it was on. And because of COVID, you can only have one person take you into the hospital and stay there and make you comfortable when you wake up, right, because of the rule of one person. And I'm born and raised in Georgia. I got family, aunts here. I got family all over the state. And out of all the people that she could have called to take her, to be there, to take her to her emergency surgery, and to sit in that waiting room while she's getting operated on, and to be there when she wakes up to get her comfortable, she calls me and says, Josh, I want you to be the one to take me in there. And I have the privilege of going to buy her 90s and her little puzzle books and being there to cope with it and to comfort her and to be there when she woke up from that surgery. This program is about healing. My life in a little over 7 years is completely flipped upside down. I ended up being a top salesman at my old company, where I ended up winning a trip to Ecuador and the Galapagos Islands when I was 5 years sober. And I'm sitting in Ecuador, and we're putting new roofs on the school, and we're putting toilets in and building playgrounds, and we're doing all these things. And I'm sitting in this field, and these little Ecuadorian kids are, like, bringing me fruit, and I'm looking around, and it's the Andes Mountains, and I'm like, how the hell does a guy like, I was sleeping in a tent. I couldn't stay out of a jail cell. How does a guy like that end up here? Here. And it was like, God. And then it was like, yeah, 12 simple steps. Right? I ended up winning another trip to New Zealand. I got married to a beautiful, amazing woman who's getting to speak in front of 12,000 people at a panel for her job. Got married. I bought my first home. I bought my first car. I got all these things. And, like, that's all good and well, but the one thing that I have today that this program gave me was peace. We've all had our time where I've looked in the mirror and go, that's a monster looking back at me. And today I love the man that I look at. And I'll say this for the newer people. If they would have told me when I walked through the door beaten, Josh, if you do what we've done, which millions and millions of people have done for almost a century now, and it's produced the same result, 12 ingredients, you use those 12 ingredients, you're going to get the cake, right? If you do this, I can promise you one thing. That voice inside your head will turn off. I would have been all in. And what I've gotten in return is so much more than that. I just found out today, like an hour before the meeting, I got a text. I took a new job because I got married and my life has changed. It's a new season. I got a text like an hour before the meeting that I just won another trip to Dublin, Ireland in less than a month. And, like, that's not everybody's story, but I'm just saying, like, all of these things, when I got here, I had nothing. Nothing. Everything I have in my life today, my peace, my wife, my family relationships, my job, my car, everything I have in my life today is a direct result of these books, this book, this program, and those steps, period. Point blank, end of story. Without this, I'm dead somewhere. Dead. So, I went a couple minutes over. Thank you guys for letting me speak. I'm just grateful to be alive and sober and to be an active member of AA. So, thank you.
What a great story. There were a lot of Me Too's for me in the what it was like part, and giving me hope for the Me Too's of the what it's like now part. So thank you, Josh. We have asked Rachel to do the chit.
Hey, Rachel.
Hey, everybody. I'm Rachel. I'm an alcoholic. And here at the Monday Night Blue Chip Seekers meeting, we have a chip system to mark your time in recovery. We start off with a white chip. If you're just coming in or just coming back, you want to try this way of life. After 30 days and nights, we offer the silver chip. Oh, what's that, 2 months? We don't give that one out. 2 months.
Days.
I guess it says that on there, 2 months. 90 days. 6 months. 9 months. Do we have any birthdays, 1 year or multiples thereof?
I appreciate that story, Josh. You brought me all the way back, man, when I first got here 13 years ago. I was in the prison cell, too. May the 8th, I had a moment of clarity. Mm-hmm. And I got out May the 9th, and I ran to AA that day. Mm-hmm. And I've been sober ever since. Thank y'all. Mm-hmm.
offer the white chip one more time in case there's any reconsiderations. Anybody just coming in, just coming back. Thank God and your sponsors for the chips you hold. Thank you, one and all, for joining the Blue Chip Speakers meeting tonight.
Strange to me, as I roam from town to town, can't put the bottle down. Right now feels like it's killing me. Life out here gets so depressing. Need something to take.